Okay, and
I guess.
okay, we're good. Okay.
Okay.
So to start, I'm just going to ask if you could introduce yourself. Who
Okay.
are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Okay, I am designer Douglas says. I'm from Newark, New Jersey, but I live in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Perfect. And so the first question that I've been like enjoying asking everyone is if you could think back to your younger self, how would you describe your first fashion memory or memories?
I think for me, as I went over these questions, the way I interpret this question right here is my younger self, my first fashion memories would be playing with my dolls or
Yeah.
playing with my sister's dolls. And you know, it's so funny because as I went over these notes again this morning, and that question stuck out to me, and I because I had I you know I wrote things down, so I have here, you know, because I had an aha moment, and the aha moment was that I was always a loner. You know, it's
Yeah.
seven of us. My mother had, you know, seven. She
Yeah.
actually had five, but she took her sisters too. So, you know, there were seven of us. And but I always stayed in my room. I had my own room, and you know, I played with my dolls, right?
Yeah.
So that's my first fashion moment. You know, dressing them, making dresses for them. Doing their hair and makeup. And then I guess as I got a little bit older, it would be my cousins. You know, as a little boy, I'm looking at them anyway, you know, because
Yeah.
you know, I idolize them. So I had one cousin that was a drag queen. So from her, I got, you know, makeup and hair and clothes and feathers and beads, you know, because she was walking balls, you know, in the 70s. So I saw all of that. And then my other cousin, who was just a spiffy dresser, you know, probably a womanizer as well. Okay, yeah, a womanizer as well. But you know, he got a whole lot of kids, you know, at this point. But yeah, but he taught me, he gave me the love of music and the love of, you know, menswear, you know, dressing and stuff. So that they would be my earliest.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And so when you were introduced to like those two cousins, one with the balls and the other one, do you remember around how old you were?
One with
Or
the balls? What you mean? Oh, balls.
oh no, who was participating in balls? I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay. I was like, huh? No. Well, they both had balls, really. No, sorry. Okay. So, oh, how old am I? Okay.
Yeah, was that like high school or younger?
Well, okay. So, I'm gonna say, because as I look through here. Ooh, it's kind of hot over here too because I can't put the fan on because you know then the noise and stuff like that. Definitely the 70s. It was definitely the 70s.
Okay.
I think all through when I was in grade school, like you know, like the sixth, seventh, you know, sixth, seventh. That's when I was, you know, would come home, play with my dolls, you know. And then when I started high school was 75. 75, 76, 77, 78. So, no, 79, 78, 77, 76. 76. Yeah, 76 was high school, right? So I started high school in 76. I still play with my dolls, right? I would come home, play with them. So we moved. So in 76, I'm 15, right? So I'm a year behind the year, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So 15, I'm playing, you know, still playing with my dolls. So 16, we moved off the block.
Okay.
Once we moved off the block, which was kind of like my safe haven, this block, you know, it was kind of like Cheers, you know, the TV show Cheers.
Yeah.
Once I moved off that block and I moved to the next place where we live, it just became a hellish nightmare for me. And even going into, you know, the night before we moved everything to the new place and we stayed overnight there. But I still had a big box of stuff, which had my dolls, my paintings, my, you know, my sketches and everything. But when we got back to the block the next day, they had broken into the apartment. So as we're walking down the street, I just see my stuff flying, you know,
Oh my gosh.
you know, and it rained the next, that day. So it's all stuck to the ground. But I never painted again. I never played with dolls again. And I guess that had to happen in order for me to mature, I suppose, or leave that alone. But then at the same time, it had to prepare me for what I was about to walk into, that neighborhood, that viciousness, But yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. And so for the next question, it is, how would you describe your design origin story? That can include what inspired you to start sewing and then ultimately pursue fashion design as a career. You spoke a little bit about that already, but
Right.
yeah.
Well, of course, look, of course somebody would call when, as soon as I start me. But anyway, my answer machine will get it. 'Cause and yeah, I do have an answer machine. Like when you call here, when you step in the door, you just step back into the 70s, right? But my design origin would definitely be, that's my sister. My design origin would definitely be in high school. So I started a men's tailoring class, and actually that was 76. So in 76, I'm in the 10th grade, right? 10th grade. And I started a sewing, it was a sewing class, but they call it men's tailoring, which was interesting. My mother had a sewing machine, my aunt had a sewing, two of my aunts had sewing machines, and then my cousin sewed, So, I was witness that, but my mother wouldn't let me use her machine because it wasn't a toy, but my other aunt would. But once I started taking that class, even though money was tight and I couldn't really afford the supplies like the muslin, the fabric, all that kind of stuff, but my mother, she made a way, and got me the things that I needed, and I was able to make a robe, the basics, make a vest, make a shirt. And then from me making those items, I would go to my aunt's house and use her machine, and then at Christmas I asked for a sewing machine and she got me my own sewing machine. And then at that, like at that time, we were doing fashion shows. We were doing lots of fashion shows, and we had to bring our own clothes. Like we weren't designers. I was a model first.
Okay.
Oh, I was a model first. So we had to bring our own clothes, right? So I would make my outfit, and me and my friend Linwood, we would work together, and we would make these outfits so that we both could walk in. And then also my girlfriend Rosemary, who kind of introduced me to fashion anyway, when she wanted to walk with us, we'd make, three outfits, and my
Okay.
girlfriend Lynn. And that's how I started doing like the women's wear. I just continued making things for the girls,
Okay. Yeah. And so, I mean, you mentioned that this started in high school, and the next question is about your like the high school you went to, right? Trap Hagen School of Fashion.
No, the high school was Westside.
Oh, okay.
Westside High School. Yeah. Trap Hagen is college.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Westside High School had sewing classes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, nice. That's amazing. I know someone else who went to Westside and they said they had photography. They had a lot of stuff that yeah, like
Before they cut the arts, I suppose, of course I had tunnel vision. That's all I can't even say that, I just had these quick aha moments because I can't say that I was looking for, a sewing class or anything, like that. But I was always looking for the easiest thing, just to get the credits, just to get out the class. And that was kind of easy. And also I took like a cooking class,
Okay.
and you had shop, I never liked shop, but I did those things. But yeah, it's funny because yesterday I was, looking through things, moving around, and I found here, okay, let's see if you can see
Oh my goodness.
this you, oh, let me see.
Is that a fly? Oh, yes, I see it. Board of Education, yes.
So this is my, like I needed my transcript to go to Trap Hagen. I had to get my school
Yeah.
report card, for them. So it has like all of my little grades on here and stuff. And this is from 1977.
Oh my
So
goodness.
1977, I was 16. So this is my report card for that. And then this, which was in the same envelope with it.
Yes.
Can you see? Is that clear? I
It
don't know.
says, I see the title of the school. Yes.
This is my report card for Trapagan.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So yeah. And
We need
this
to
that
get you an archivist.
this says 82.
Okay.
1982.
So can you talk about your experience at Trapagan, as well as at FIT?
You know
Did
how they
you have to
say,
make a portfolio to get in there? Like, what was the
well,
process?
I always had a portfolio already. So like even when I went into school, like okay, so me in high school, me like 1979, 1978, 78, I would be 17, right? So at that time, I was working with photographers, the local photographers in, downtown, in Newark. John Mitchell, who was an amazing photographer. He really influenced even the way I deal today with photographers and, and just the artistry of, photography. I could easily be a photographer, if I, because I've been working with him for years. James Hunter, Preston Phillips. I mean, it's a long list of photographers that I was working with. And like everything, there are levels. You got A, B, C, one,
Yeah.
two, three, right? So those guys were, the top tier photographers in Jersey. And I hadn't even started doing makeup yet. I just was, they would shoot my clothes. And
Okay.
but I was privy to the best models, they were all older than me, Rosemary, Nora Smith, Rosalind Johnson, Tashia Wilson,
Husband, yeah.
just Marsha Vaughn, all of the girls, I was privy to work with those ladies and with those photographers. So that, so when I went into school for the interview, I already had a portfolio. And my first interview, I was interviewed by a newspaper, which was the Afro-American newspaper. It was from downtown Newark, right? And so that was my first interview, which Angelo Ellerbe set up for me. And Angelo Ellerbe was a show promoter. He's
Yeah.
also, like currently he's a PR person, right?
Yeah.
And he handles like Melba Moore, Dionne Warwick, and so on. But he picked up the phone. We were having it. I was sitting there with him. He picked up the phone, called the Afro-American, said, "I have this guy. He's an amazing designer. You have to meet him. You have to do a story on him." And boom, they did a story on me, which I still have the article from 1979.
Wow.
So yeah, and Angelo was actually at that time he was about to do a show because he's a show producer. So he did a big show. It was called Heat Wave. And it was in 1979, and it was at Sultan's Palace, which was a
So
spot in
thank
East
you for that.
Orange.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was that show was so amazing. I opened the show,
Wow.
and that was like monumental, He opened the show with girls. He had like three girls in duffel bags, like oversized duffel bags, and the guys were dressed in army suits, navy suits, and they're carrying the duffel bags onto the runway. And Grace Jones, LaVeyon Rose is playing, or I Need a Man, one of the two. And they came out, they set the bags down, and then boom, the girls jumped out of the bag and start walking. And they had on these dotted dresses that I made. The fabric was dotted, yeah, that was basically it. Yeah.
So wait, to get into Trappenhagen, or wait,
Trapagan.
Trappenhagen, I'm sorry. I'm wondering, yeah, you said you already had a portfolio from all of those moments. And so like when you were like if when you were like studying there, did you already feel like you kind of already knew, like you're like, I already do this? Like what was the
No, I was so insecure at that time, in my life. I didn't understand. I felt like I had walked into outer limits, the outer limits. I didn't know how to drape. I didn't know how to do everything that I was doing already was, self-taught. I didn't have any direction. Because like the women's wear, even the men's wear, because the men's tailoring course didn't really, it just gave you the basics of basics of basics, how to follow a commercial pattern, but it didn't teach you how to make what's in your head, So now coming into Trapagan, this was very different because we have a class full of other students, right? They're sitting around, and it's like definitely, I'm gonna say like four people to a table, but it's like a big square table, and we're at each end of the table, right? And actually, Tyrone Chablis was at that table with me, So, that's when I met Tyrone at Trapagan. But so when the teacher would give instructions, she's teaching us how to drape. So the teacher would first show you what to do, and then now you're supposed to do it on your own. I mean, it was so foreign to me because I had never done that before. And so and again, I'm insecure, so I'm trying to do the best that I can, and and you're trying to keep up with everybody else because some people are moving faster and you're like looking around, So yeah, school was, it was interesting. I wish that I knew now what I didn't know then, because I didn't take full advantage of school, I didn't take it serious. I didn't, like, if you look on this report card, there were like things that I didn't complete, there's a, we had to do like a little book. Every pattern that we made, full size pattern, we had to do like a miniature pattern to go into this book, which would be like our instruction kind of thing, right? I never finished that. Because, even in, I never liked school, period. Like, from first to, to the end, I never liked school. All I would ever do in school is draw. I always knew how to draw, and I would just sit there and draw. And it's so funny, like this year, I think it was this year or last year, I said, I found a friend of mine who went to school with me on Facebook, and I inboxed him and said, "Hey, how you doing?" Right? So he hit me back. He was like, "Oh, wow." He says, "I see, I've seen your stuff that you post." He said, "So I guess sketching in school and leaving the sketches on the desk finally paid off." Because that's what I would do. I would just sit there, whatever class I was in, I'd just sketch. And when I left, I'd leave the sketch on the desk, right?
My goodness.
So I'm not paying attention to history or math or any of that, And by the end of the school year, I had to go to summer school. Like, my 12th grade, I failed everything, So I had to go to summer school, but I refused to go to summer school because why would I go to summer school to do everything that I didn't want to do anyway? Especially gym. I never would take gym. Every time gym came up, I'm sick. Oh, can I go to the nurse's office? Oh, my stomach hurts. I just didn't want to be in the dressing room, in the locker room with those boys, Because they took it all so serious. I didn't care about basketball, baseball, football, none of that, So yeah. So I had to go to I had to get my GED, basically. So that's why I had to get the transcript
To go to traffic.
to go to Trapagan.
Yes. I'm like, I want to ask so many other questions because I'm like, you saying you met Tyrone Chablis there. I'm like, are there any other like models or designers that you met there or at FIT that like became part of your tribe going forward?
Well, it's a small circle. Well, then it was a small circle. Now everybody wants to be a designer, But then it was a small circle. There was a girl named Cheryl Head, who also was from Newark. There was a guy named Rafi Thomas, Darren Thomas, who, he works in the industry. He does pretty well in the industry. There was quite a few, from Jersey, that I didn't know them before school. I would see Tyrone around, in the village and stuff, because, we both are colorful men, to put it politely. So I would see him on the pier and, in the village and stuff like that. But yeah, but the rest of the people I didn't know, but we all became fast friends. And then, we were doing local fashion shows. Well, not not them. Like I wasn't even doing the same shows with Tyrone. Tyrone, like I didn't know him from the shows. I knew him from, seeing
From
him in the
class.
village and
Yeah.
stuff.
Oh, okay.
So the fashion shows had a whole different thing. Like there was a Richard Cureton who was a designer. There was Michael Wright, Bob Henry, Ronald Petty. Oh my God. Oh, actually, I made a note of it right here. Let me just look on my note and see who they. Okay, designers: Ronald Petty, Jamie McDonald, Bob Henry, Kevin Rowan, Gal Grundy, Michael Goodwin, Michael Wright, Richard Cureton, and all of them are deceased now.
Wow.
Yeah, but all of them were doing shows, and yeah, it was quite a camaraderie with, the fashion shows. And there were tons of locations, because I know one of the questions was where
I
we're
know. All right.
filming.
I'm like, let me formally ask the question so we
Yes,
can have
okay,
it on
fine.
the record.
Go
But this
ahead.
is so exciting. How influential has the New York fashion community been to your journey as a designer? You already spoke about that a little bit. But yes, can you please talk about the design scene in Newark, in the early 80s? How did you find out about the fashion shows? Were there any publications? I mean, you mentioned Afro American newspaper, which I'm really interested, like they were documenting fashion at the time, the
Okay.
promoters and the venues, et cetera.
So, that's question number four, how influential, right? Okay, so I said here, in the past it was very influential, but currently I don't find it to be such. Even though it's opened up more, fashion in New Jersey, but fashion was always big in New Jersey. But back in the day, we had places like FTD, which was fashion, theater, and design. It was these two gentlemen, James Taliaferro and Bobby Roberts. They opened up a modeling school, right? And it was amazing. Like at that modeling school, which is where Rosalind learned to model. So Rosalind was their protege, right? So and she also went to Society Unlimited, which was where Rosemary went to learn how to model. I went to a school called BUGNG, which was Beautiful Gents and Girls, or whatever, something like that, right? James Taliaferro and Bobby Roberts, by day they operated a modeling agency and a daycare, right? By evening it became a disco. It became, a club called The Showcase, which was fabulous, because you had, all these models, because they had, all the models that they had were older, they were grown, they had Nora Smith, Rosalind Johnson, Dawn Toller, Yvette Carr, Monette Vorders, and they had guys, Walter Bryan, and a host of others, a host of others. So yeah, by day, again, it was daycare. And even like in I'm still in high school at this point, and summer, when summer came, they had like Speedy. I don't know if you're familiar with the Speedy programs.
No.
It used to be like a summer program where you could get a summer job, right? And
Okay.
so Speedy would, pay you whatever, right? So I worked for them. I worked for FTD during the summer. And that's where me and Linwood and Roslyn, and it just became, this whole family. But we were all kind of like family. Like the fashion shows backstage was like when we really all got to see each other and hang out, even though we were doing the clubbing and stuff too. We had like Murphy's downtown Newark. Everybody went there, even though it was a gay bar, but the girls would go there too. Rosalind would be there. Rosemary would be there. It was just this thing. They were our little fag hags. That's what we called them. Back then, it wasn't offensive back then. So and then there was also the Garage. There was Better Days. There was Crisco's Disco. There was and if we ventured outside of New Jersey and New York, and we went to DC, there was the Clubhouse. If we went to PA, there was Catacombs, and people like Ronald Petty, who was a
Oh no, you're frozen. Oh no, we're missing information. Is he frozen to you? So many details. Oh, Douglas. I'm like, should I just be patient?
Oh, okay.
Okay, we
I'm
can hear you
back.
now. Yes.
Okay.
The last thing I heard was Ronald Petty.
Your internet connection is unstable. I don't even know how to fix that. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying the last thing I heard was Ronald Petty.
Yeah, so Ronald Petty was a designer. He worked for Vogue Patterns. And he was older than me, but I was watching him. Because he went to West Side also. I mean, he would always be done, like capes and derby hats and just always done. The girls would be done, when they would go out to the club, he would, dress a girl up and take her with him. And Jamie McDonald was also that. So those were the people that I was watching, and I'm like, wow, I wanna be that, And he encouraged me to go to design school, and Bob Henry encouraged me to go to design school, and I wanted my work to be to look like theirs, quality wise, So I went to Trapagan. I wanted to go to FIT because FIT was like that was a buzz, FIT. Bob went to FIT. Ronald went to Parsons, and I wanted to go to FIT. But when I went to the interview, right? They said no, they turned me down. I was a little brokenhearted, but Trapagan was around, so I found Trapagan in the back of like Bazaar, Bazaar magazine. They used to always run ads in the back of for Trapagan, and I found it, and I contacted them, make do all the steps. And I went to the interview and I was able to go to Trapagan. So Trapagan was wonderful. Actually, because everything happens for a reason, right? And I'm real clear on that. Sometimes you may be ready for something, but it's not right for you just yet. But Trapagan was the perfect place for me to be. A bigger school, I would have given up. I would have walked through. When I did get to go to FIT, I gagged because there was math. And history, I don't like any of that, right? But at Trapagan, it was just fashion. It was just pattern making, draping, sewing, it was just that. So I was able to flourish in that. So Trapagan was it was a gem. And they had like Joffrey Bean went there, who is still one of my favorite designers. Galanos, who is also
Galanos,
an extreme talent,
yes.
Anne Klein herself. Those are some of the alumni. But and you know it was there that I learned a little bit about archival because they had trunks in the hallway where things were stored, and they showed you how to store things in a tissue paper and this and so that's where the archive. But of course, I was already keeping things, I probably like again, if certain things didn't happen, you would have more. Like when I moved off of 18th Street, if they hadn't broken in the house and stole all that stuff, I probably would have those dolls right now still, because I keep everything. So yeah, but sometimes you got to be freed up from yourself, blah blah blah.
You dropping life gems in between. I'm like, yes, freed up. Oh my gosh, that's so amazing.
You can look at your notes if you have to.
I know. I'm well, it's just also because like now I have all these other questions and I'm like, man, this needs to be like a series of conversations, not just one conversation. Right. So basically so you would say like finding out about the shows was more like just you found out about the show because you were a part of the community. Like it was word of mouth, it was the promoters, things like that.
Back then we could hang flyers and posters, right?
Okay.
So, you know, we didn't have the internet, right? We couldn't, you know, do that. So we would do a, we'd do an actual poster, which was like about a 17 by 24, right? With a picture on it. And then it would have all the designers, all the models, all, you know, everybody, makeup, everybody on that, right? So, so that's how we learned. And then they would go downtown Newark and just post them up everywhere. You know,
Okay.
post them all downtown before it became illegal, because now you know, you get a ticket for posting something on a building or whatever, right? But that's how we used to do it. And then we would go to the club. So we would see each other all the time, you know. So we'd give each other flyers, and you know, back then it was such a me. It's so much that we have now that we didn't have then. Of course, you know that, right? And you know, it could you imagine? We didn't have call waiting back then. So if I'm on the phone talking to Linwood or talking to Rosemary, because those are basically the only ones I talked to at the time. If I'm talking to Rosemary and Linwood wants to talk to us, he would call the operator and he would, you know, dial the operator and say he wanted to have an emergency phone call. And the operator would break into my call and say, Linwood is calling an emergency phone call. Will you accept? And I'd say yes, and then I'd hang up from Rosemary and then talk to Linwood. So that's what we used to do, because we didn't have call waiting, we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have social media, we, you know, all of that stuff. Yeah.
But in some ways, it sounds like it felt so much more like vibrant and community based. Like, you know, even though we have all this technology, I feel like sometimes it can feel more like, I don't know, just siloed and less of like a community feeling.
And
So.
true, because you lose, we lost a lot of person to person touch kind of thing. You know what I mean? We don't call anymore. We just text. We don't, like, once I give you my number, you don't even bother to call me. You just text me, you know? Back then we used to, it would be a group of us, like my friend Tommy. Okay, so Rosemary is the first female model that I met, right? So I'm not even in fashion yet, or I haven't even started yet. I didn't even know. I didn't take classes or anything. She moved on my block in the 70s, and I used to see her. So she's a year older than me. I always tease her about being way older than me, but she's a year older than me, right? So she had an older sister who was fashionable, who was very fashionable, right? So she, you know, she took her notes from her sister. So when Rosemary moved on the block, she was so graceful. She was like a swan. You know, she had this long neck. Her carriage was so sophisticated. And, you know, and she would go like thrifting all the time, like go to the thrift stores and buy stuff. I didn't know no, nothing about that, right? She was wearing petal pushers, and you know, she was always done, right? So I'm like, who is this? Who is this woman? You know, I because you know, she was showing me things that I hadn't seen yet, right? So I got to meet her and we became friends, and that opened the whole door to, you know, me and fashion. And actually she introduced me to Rosalind Johnson, you know, down the road, because they had already went to school to Society Unlimited, to the modeling school. So actually Rosemary had a hand in introducing me to a lot of things that, you know, even me doing later, way later in life, doing a plus size line. That was because of Rosemary, you know. It's so funny because I had this conversation. This is off script, kind of, not off script, but you know, I'm going way over there, which I do. So I was talking to somebody yesterday, Etta, which is one of my girls, and I was telling her how, you know, when I started doing a plus size line, people had asked me to do, you know, oh, would you make me something? But I was so insecure about, you know, sizing and stuff. If you didn't fit my sloper, my pattern, right? If somebody called me at the studio, because then I had a studio downtown Newark. I was downtown Newark from 1997 to 2009, right? First I was on Broad Street, then I was on Washington Street, and then I was on Commerce Street. So I was big on prom. Prom, you know, prom just came through the door, right? So, and actually me and Marco Hall were together in that space. I invited Marco to my space. He was working from home, and he came and never left.
Yeah.
When I'm doing prom, but if somebody called, I would ask them, what size are you? Right? And if they said, which is again, it's not proper to do, right? But I would do it, right? I would ask them what size are them. So if they said more than a 10, I'd direct them to Marco. I give them to Marco. So Marco had lots, he had tons of people to do because I was limited. At that time, I wasn't even doing menswear. And this is like 99, 2000, but I learned a lot. We learned a lot from each other working with each other, Now I cover all aspects of fashion. But when I started to do the plus size, so I was talking to a young lady yesterday. So it's another model, Sharon Quinn. She used to always ask me, would I make her something? Would I make her something? And no, because she was, she's about I'm sorry. I was about to say what size she is, but no. Okay. So, I didn't go up that far in sizes, right? So, my girlfriend Etta, who's one of my models, for Sharon's birthday, she paid for me to make Sharon a wrap dress, right? So I made Sharon a wrap dress, and this is her first Douglas Says item, right? It takes her to tell you about her dress. She loved it, but eventually she got it got caught in the escalator going up the escalator, and it tore up, right? But I made her this dress. She loved it, so she finally had this dress. Now she has like tons of Douglas Says. So Rosemary eventually opened up a boutique in PA, and she asked me, could she put my things in the boutique? Just because they didn't have anything else in the store, and they wanted to put things in the window and stuff like that. So I was like, "Yeah, sure, take it. It's not doing anything." So I give her all the stuff, and so people start coming into the store and asking about the clothes and wanting to wear it. But real size people are coming into the store. My sample is like a 4'6", so they can't fit it, and there's only one of anything because it's the first sample, right? So then she asked me, "Would I consider making clothes like those, but in a bigger size for the store?" I was like, okay, yeah, okay, fine. So it's her and another girl who have this store, right? So I start to make the samples, but I'm not familiar with the body type of, a bigger body. So I'm like, okay, is this, because to me, when I hold it up, it looks really, really big, right? Because I'm used to 4'6". So now I'm doing like a 16, 18, and it looks huge because I don't have a form. My dress form is 4'6", right? So one day, Rosemary's partner comes to the studio with her aunt, and I look at her aunt and I'm like, she looks like she could fit this dress, right? So I asked her, would she try it on? She does, and it fits perfectly. She winds up buying it actually. And so from that point, I know I can go ahead and do everything in this size range, right? So my stuff never actually gets to go into her store because Rosemary and her partner break up at some point, and now I'm stuck with all these clothes that I've made. But that's just the spirit. The spirit leads you differently. The spirit, it led me to do a plus size collection. And the only way I would have done that is through Rosemary and for Rosemary, who Rosemary is the one who introduced me to fashion anyway, right? And now I'm doing this plus size. So that's when I decided to do, well, actually, it's already been ordained. It wasn't me, but the spirit decided that I was going to do a full figure fashion show. So I did my line, which was called Plus You, and that happened,
So would you say it's so would you say that around this time, like around the 80s and 90s is when you like formally established the brand Douglas Says then?
Okay, so I'm sewing it throughout the 70s and 80s. So I figured when I started, because 85, 84, I'm still, doing major collections, but I'm going under my given name, my mother's last name, which you notice I don't even say, right? Yeah, it's only Douglas Says now, right? So I'm everything is under that. Like if you look at flyers from shows that it's, that name. So, in 86, I start working for Virgin Atlantic Airways, right? Because again, I still have insecurities that I need to work out. I don't even feel secure enough to go to work in fashion, right? Because I don't think I can do it, right? Even though, because I haven't, the first designer that I worked for was called Via Couture, right? And I went to FIT, I looked on the boards, and I saw that they were hiring for an intern, and I go and I got the job. But it was just really doing like handwork, gluing, sewing, beading, that kind of stuff. But I picked up their aesthetics, which was very interesting because I ran into that designer like maybe like 2 years ago, like on 8th Avenue, and it was interesting seeing him again, But yeah, so that gave me a little confidence, But by the time I went to FIT, which was probably 80, 84, like about like 80, I mean, of course, I have something around with every date on it. But by the time I went to FIT, yeah, because there was, okay, so I go to FIT. I used a friend of mine's address so that I could, register as a New York State, kind of person. And I start taking classes. Of course, I got math. I got to do math. I got to do history, So, but anyway, but the draping and the pattern making is okay. Even, but when I go to the interview, they, they look at my book, they look at my sketches, and they tell me, well, it seems that you got everything you needed from Trapegan. You don't really need to come here. But if you want to, we'll take your money, right? So I was like, okay, I'm happy. I think it was mostly ego for me that I really wanted to go to FIT, period, right? So I'm in FIT, I'm doing everything I need to do. And then a couple of months down the road, there's a competition, a show competition. Don Blasingame, who is also one of the show producers who, do major shows, he's doing a competition. So Rosemary has already won the competition, and the prize is a trip to Paris. So Rosemary's already won and been to Paris. Bob Henry's already won and been to Paris. Deborah Shore has already won and been to Paris. So I'm gonna go in this competition, and in my mind, I'm gonna win, right? So I enter the competition, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna cover all bases. I'm gonna put my sister in the competition too, because my sister was a model for me, right? So I put my sister Wendy in as a female model. I enter as a male model. I enter as a designer. And so I gotta win at some point, right? I don't. Okay. So, but I drop out of school. I drop out of Trapegan just to concentrate on doing this competition and winning, right? But I didn't win. Yeah.
How would you, okay, the next question I'm going to ask is about the fabric that you use. And I guess I'm asking this also because I'm wondering, because I also want to like hear you describe like your aesthetic. Like you mentioned a wrap dress and I know you use jersey. So one of the questions on the list is you once said, born and raised in Jersey and everything I do is in Jersey. Why do you feel Jersey is the best medium to express your designs? As well as can you talk maybe a little bit about your design aesthetic, like
Okay. What's interesting right now to me is that I like if you follow me on Instagram, right? So I've been sharing images. So it's in my head, it's like six girls and six images by six different photographers, right? But it doesn't turn out to be that. That's what it started
Are
out to
those
be like.
girls the Douglettes? or
It's the Dougie
Duggets. Yes.
Etz, which hails from Halston, because Halston had the Halston Etz, right? Tyrone had the Shabber Etz. Okay. So basically, well, some of them are the Dougie Etz, and then some are not. It's so funny because in my head, I was going to be starting to do a documentary on myself, not so much myself, but my work, right? So I've been collecting all this stuff, and I gave out scripts to the girls to answer these questions and film themselves and send it back to me. Only two people have done so far, and so I'm just like, okay, whatever. But so with the images that I've been pulling, I figure, because people only know you for what they know you for, right? So, but I've done everything. You do everything before you settle into a position of, of comfort or whatever. So I did chiffon, I did linen, I did wool, I did all of those things before, So that's what you're seeing now posted on there, because I'm taking you back as early as, the late 70s with, with the posts. So my sister Wendy is wearing most of the 70s stuff, like if you followed, because she lived at home with me. So as soon as I'm finishing something, hey, come here, try this on, right? And I had a Polaroid camera, long before I knew that Polaroid cameras were what the industry used to do the look boards, right? So now, so all of those go, and wait, so here, come here, if you can see it. So this little piece of paper here, I know you can't see
So I
the
can
name.
see handwriting.
Right. So those are all the models that are slated for next in that series, right? So all of them, will be on that Instagram thing. But so basically, I work in jersey fabrications. A lot of people think that it's like other people say, oh, it's so hard, jersey hard, it's this and that. But it's easy to me. It's like breathing, I'm comfortable with it. It Chiffon is crazy. Chiffon makes me crazy. I don't even want to touch that stuff. I don't like the way wool feels in my hands, but I'll work with it. I'll do a coat. But jersey is it's a no-brainer for me. It's a no-brainer. Yeah. And I've been doing, like, even when you go to school, like Trapagan, you have to do there's a knit project, you have to do jersey. There's a coat project. There's a, they got this whole series of stuff that you have to do, right? So the jersey stuff is second nature to me.
It's just, you gravitated towards it.
And and coming up, in the 70s, the influences that I had were film, which was the black exploitation films, for lack of a better term, because they're I don't think that they should be called black exploitation. They were vehicles for black actors and designers and makeup artists to actually work, So it's black exploitation sounds negative, and I don't think it was negative. Of course, some of the storylines were okay. Most or all of the storylines were negative, but there was some power in there, and there was some community in there amongst the drugs and the prostitution and all of that stuff. But Cleopatra Jones and Coffee, who were both instrumental in my direction, I still refer to, especially Cleopatra Jones, because Cleopatra Jones was a model. The real, well, Tamara Dotson was a model. And all of her clothes were in all of the clothes in the movie Cleopatra Jones and Cleopatra Jones in the Casino of Gold were done by ooh, my one of my favorite designers too. Just a moment, I'm having a brain freeze. Giorgio Di Sant'Angelo. So yeah, and it's interesting. One day I was looking at something, and it, because it doesn't even give you the full credit. Like when you look at those movies and you're looking at the credit, it doesn't like give you designer credits or who did what, who did. But I read an article, and one of the black designers from that time frame, he was a furrier, and it only made sense. Like he did the furs for her, for Cleopatra Jones. So it's like, but they weren't really giving them the credit that they need, and wow. And I really say, I know this jumps ahead of what you're saying, but or what you're asking me, but it is so important for us to document our own history. And that's one of the reasons why on Instagram I'm sharing past images of my work, because I've done it all. Like the whole dress, like my whole dress. This last season, fashion season, or not the current one, but there were holes everywhere. Everybody did holes. And it's so funny because everybody was inboxing me, sending me those images of, because they were familiar with my whole dress, and sending me those images. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. You started something a long time ago and you didn't even have a clue. But that was, again, the spirit working in me and me being obedient.
Yes, so this is actually going to make me jump back to a question that I didn't ask, which I mean, you kind of touched on it in terms of like talking about the club scene. But another like really fascinating moment that, because you talking about the whole dress makes me think about the whole cat suit, right? And Beyonce and Ma Rainey and all of that. So my question was, can you talk about the connection between the queer club scene and the fashion scene? Because I'm specifically thinking about that cat suit. Or if you just want to talk about the cat suit in general and like what that moment was.
It's funny because recently I was listening to a cassette tape, right? Because yeah, I got that here too. So I'm listening to a cassette tape of my messages, right? And my then friend William comes on the machine, and he's telling me about the ball and that I should bring these dresses to the ball, right? Because he knew that I did the whole cat suit and the whole dress, and there's also a whole bodysuit. And he says you should bring them to a ball because they have a category for designers, and you can show those pieces, and you'll probably win the cash. It's a cash prize. He said you'll find somebody to wear. All the girls, so just bring it. So I do. I come to the ball and I bring the whole cat suit and the whole dress, and Anjanae is who I find. So Anjanae walks for me. And so she's the first person to wear the whole dress. And then so I'm like the first designer to even show, right? Waiting in the wings is Angel Claudio, who is also a Jersey designer who was amazingly talented. He passed as well. But he was really firmly planted in the ballroom. And then he rolls out a rack of clothes, like literally a rack of clothes. And I was like, oh, child, please, I'm done. I knew I wasn't, I didn't stand a chance with two outfits against a rack. But anyway, we used to do a show in the 90s for this guy that we knew who worked for G-Man, right? The Gay and Lesbian Center on 13th Street. So
Is
we
that
started.
in New York? Sorry, or New York?
In New York, yeah. This one guy that we knew, he lived in Jersey, but he worked with them, right? So he knew all of us from Murphy's, because Murphy's was like the meeting place. Everybody went to Murphy's on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, right? So he asked Bob to do the show, Bob Henry. So Bob enlisted Linwood Allen, Dwayne Fish, Emmanuel Denson, myself. We all came to New York and we did the show. So at this show, like, we would have rehearsals. Once we got signed on to do a show, any of us, we brought our professionalism, because we work backstage for the ground crew. So we know how to do production. We know how to run the backstage. We know how to run the show, all that, so that it's seamless, right? And then, I also was a model trainer, so I can show them how to walk, whatever, right? So we bring all of that, we do all these rehearsals, and then we have the fashion show. So Wa Renee was one of the models in the show. And the funny thing is, just recently, like, I have a closet full of videotapes from all of these shows, right? So I had this one guy, I hope I'm not boring you guys.
No.
This one guy, he's doing a documentary on Wa Renee. right? So he had hit me up and asked me, could he was doing a podcast first, right? So he wanted to interview me. So he came over, interviewed me. That was like a couple of years ago, like maybe 2 years ago. So now he's doing a documentary. So he, once I did the whole cat suit for you guys for the exhibit, right? I posted it on, I didn't want to post it on Facebook or Instagram, so I posted it on Twitter, right? I didn't know he was following me on Twitter, but as soon as I posted it, my phone rang and he was like, "Oh, I see you did the whole cat suit. Oh, we're doing a documentary. Can we shoot it? Because we're going to do a reenactment of the Warrenne, blah 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 blah." I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, sure, no problem." So they did that. They did that whole thing. So yeah. So when I did the fashion, and I said the videotapes because I told him about the videotapes, and he was like, "Oh, I'd love to see them. Can you send me some footage? Blah blah blah." So I sent, play it and take a picture of it and
Yeah.
send it to him, whatever. So he was like, "I will translate or take them from tape and put them on DVD or put them on flash drive for you if you let me use them, blah blah blah." So I was like, "Yeah, you can, yeah, go ahead, no problem." So that's in the works now. Okay. So anyway, Warrenne is one of the people that I dressed for that exhibit, and I mean for that fashion show. And during that time, Warrenne worked. Not only did she work at night at the club, which was Midtown 43 in New York on 43rd Street. But she also worked at a boutique on 7th Avenue, right? And eventually I put my clothes in the boutique. So my clothes were in the boutique, so I dressed her. So at a point after the show, she asked me, could she wear my whole cat suit for this video thing that she was doing? And so basically it wasn't like a video for the song. It was like a TV show, like a cable TV show that she was performing on, right? And so I said yes, I came. I bought, because I bought it there, so I was with her the whole time. I'm actually in the audience. You can see the back of my head in the video, right? So I dressed her in that, and this other kid did the wig. His name is Karan, but Karen. His name is Ron, but but anyway, and you probably know him because he's affiliated. Well, he's in Newark also. He's affiliated with the Gay and Lesbian Center and all that kind of stuff. But he did the wig and I did the cat suit, and that's how that happened. After it was done, I never even thought about it again. Like most things we did, we just walked away from it, going on to the next thing, it wouldn't be till years later that I would actually even see the video, like on it, on social media or Google or whatever, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I forgot about this," kind of thing. Yeah. I can't hear you.
Sorry, yes.
Okay.
Amazing. And then I have to ask about Tracy, your long-term muse and collaborator. How did you and Tracy meet? What does that collaboration look like?
Well, Tracy was already, she's always been a legend, like a legend in Jersey, a legend, model, all that kind of stuff. So I heard of her before I saw her, before I met her, And I know the first time I ever met her, me and Linwood, we were at a show. I want to say that it was like a competition, like, because she just kind of, we were in the back in the dressing room and she breezed in and we're just like nudging each other. "Look, there goes Tracy, there goes, Tracy." And she comes in and she's snatched back. Back then she used to wear her hair snatched back a lot in a ponytail. So she comes in, it's like she floated in to the dressing room, right? And she was with Dal Grundy and Al Grundy. Dal Grundy was a designer, fabulous designer. And Al Grundy was a makeup artist, fabulous makeup artist. He did a lot of celebrities and stuff like that. So it seems that she was walking for Dal Grundy. She had on some black leather pants and a chiffon, a flowy chiffon top, and she was topless. She, no bra, sheer chiffon. And she walked. So she came in, she took her ponytail off, which I thought was really her hair. And then when I seen it in the chair, I was like, oh, But and then she put on this curly wig, because during at that time she was doing the Andre Douglas wig campaign, right? Andre Douglas was a hair designer, a wig designer, and famous wig designer, and he did this Rasta wig. So she had that on. She put that on, she walked, and then they left, Then shortly after that, I did another show, which was at this place called Tom's. What Tom's? Let me see, because I wrote it down right here. Hold on 1 second. Okay, because you asked about the shows. So the places that we were doing shows was the Coronet, Club Kayam, Dupes, Tom's Restaurant, Irvington Manor, Robert Treat, which was first the Quality Inn, and then it became the Robert Treat, Symphony Hall, the Hilton Gateway, Scott's Manor, Paradiso's. So those are some of the places that we did fashion shows. So this one was at Tom's Restaurant, and this is actually the first time that I introduced Tracy to Nisa. I don't even think you know Nisa, but yeah. So anyway,
And this is the 80s.
yes, I should have pulled the flyer. It's like 80, wait. It had to be 81, 82.
Okay.
I showed that pink. I'm gonna say it was 1980. It was 1980 because that was before school. That was before I started school.
Okay.
So yeah. So Tracy's in the audience. She's just in the audience. Rosemary's walking, Nora's walking, because I always had the privilege of dressing the best models that were in the show, right? And so I'm spoiled, I'm spoiled that goes with, like, okay. Anyway, sometimes I have to stop myself from saying things, So I dress the best models in the show, and Tracy's watching the show, so she sees this pink suit that I have on Rosemary, which is a skirt suit. It's a crepe suit with chiffon sleeves. See, I was doing chiffon, I was doing crepe. Look at that. So she asked me, could she borrow it? And I was pleased, because this is crazy. She wants to borrow my outfit, because I'm 1980, I'm 19, So yes, you could borrow it. So she had it for way too long. She kept it for too long. She borrowed it, but she had intentions on keeping it, So I, reached out to her as time went by to get it back, right? But I asked her before she could return it, would she do a photo shoot for me in the outfit? And she said yes. So I'm still in high school at this point, but I'm also working a little job. So I can't even attend the fast. I can't even attend the photo shoot. So I asked Linwood to bring the outfit and, to go. So I'm working with photographer James Hunter at the time. So he shoots her in the outfit. And so this is like 1980. You know when I saw the pictures? I probably saw those pictures in like 2009.
Wow.
So. But all of those things like that made me very strict and starch with photographers, because I realized, like, I'm 18, 19 years old, and I'm doing all of this stuff. When I would do photo shoots with them, I would dress the model. Eventually I started doing makeup, so then I'm painting the model, I'm booking the model, and posing the model. I'm showing them what to do, right? And then the photographer clicks the camera, takes the images, and I get nothing. I would get a Polaroid. We were fighting over Polaroids because, they're testing the light, so they're doing a Polaroid. They're only doing, like, a couple of Polaroids, and you want to have this Polaroid, and they're like, oh, I need this one. You got all the film, So in, like, later, I like when I did my first book, which was Amuse, and I was using all of those images from the 80s and the 70s. I realized I didn't really have any quality images, because all I was given at that time was either a Polaroid or a laser copy. And lasers didn't fan well over time, they started to peel. So a lot of stuff was lost because of the quality of the thing. And funny thing, because if you go back and ask the photographer where's the images, they don't even have them. If they had at least given them to me, I'd still have them.
Oh my
But
goodness.
today, a photographer can't get away with that. You know, today
Yeah.
is you got to give me everything, plug it up to my computer and download it, all of it. You know, so yeah.
Right. Wow.
Oh, so wait.
Would you say so you guys just kind of bonded off of those initial moments of the two?
I'm gonna come right back and tell you that. I'm sorry, I got to take a little boys' room break. Sorry.
This makes me want to see the actual archive. Now I'm like, how can I use my library?
I was thinking
This
about that.
collection needs to be somewhere. It needs to be described. It needs to,
I was thinking about the videos, like the
like the
VHS
video.
collections. Could that be in the show?
I'm not
Like
sure.
an old TV with a VHS display.
I feel like at this point they'll probably tell us no. But it also makes me think like, I mean, maybe something could happen after this where there's
Yeah.
like there could be a whole exhibit just on like the ephemera, the flyers, the video.
That's what I was thinking, the flyers too. I have a note
Yeah.
on just that.
I'm like, yeah, like
I'm back.
Hello.
So, okay, back to Tracy. So, you know, and it's crazy because some photographers, you know, local photographers, they didn't even want to shoot her because they knew, they didn't know, but they had heard, you know. They didn't have any proof, you know, but they had heard, and they didn't want to shoot her. The photographers that I was working with. So again, James shot her, but I didn't get the film for forever, and I only got one image, one picture, and it wasn't even the outfit. It was just like, you know, her head, whatever. So yeah, that was crazy. Okay, so then we the next time I once I got the outfit back, she went off, we went off, whatever, our separate ways. I think at that point she went to Europe, which I could tell you where is it? I could tell you exactly the date, the time frame, because letter wise, but anyway, so she goes to Europe because Rosemary goes to Europe. Tracy and Sherry go to Europe. So when she comes back, I'm having, by that point, I graduate from Trapagan and we're having our graduation fashion show. And she's in town. And she's with an agency at that point. I think she's with Grace Del Marco. And she gets booked to do our school show, right? So this is when I see her again, right? She's because they have an alumni who's showing also, right?
Okay.
So the alumni book Tracy for the show, right? So that's when I see her again. I book Rosalind Johnson, so I have Rosalind Johnson and Rosemary Kuzar for my collection. Tyrone has Denise McDonald for his collection, and he's also commentating the show, right? So yeah, so Tracy does the show, and we still don't really like link up at that point. We link up like about a year later. I do my first show, like I'm giving my first show, which is 1983, and it's going to be at the Quality Inn downtown Newark, which is now the Hilton Gateway, right? Or no, it's something else now. It's called something else, right? Not Quality Inn. It was the Hilton Gateway, but now it's called something else, right? So right across the street from Penn Station anyway. So I'm doing this show and I'm making a big to-do of it. I got posters everywhere. And I done called everybody to be a part of the show, every designer I know, every model I know, and I'm really selling it. I'm selling the show. I'm putting girls against girls, I'm putting designers against designers, you know, I'm making it like a competition, right? So I get a phone call from Tracy. And she says, I hear you're doing a fashion show. I said, yes. And I'm excited because this is Tracy. You know, this is Tracy Morgan. So she said, I hear you're doing a fashion show. I said, yes. She says, who else is doing it? I said, Roslyn, Lou, Lucilena Sierra, which is this new girl. I just met Lou, right? I don't know if you know Lou or you heard me talk about Lou or whatever. Okay, amazing. But anyway, so and Rosemary introduced me to Lou as well, right? So Tracy says, well, I want to do the show too. I said, oh, okay. She says, well, how much are they getting paid? I said, because I know Rosalind's getting paid. That's what she says. I said, well, Rosalind says, because this is, again, you know, this is like 83. So, you know, I said, Rosalind's getting $75. And she said that she'll sell tickets to get her money. So, you know, give her the tickets, she'll make the money, and you know, but okay, fine. So she was like, well, she said, I want $50 and four dresses. I said, oh no. I can't give you four dresses. And you calling me because you want to do the show, because you hear all these people in the show and you want, no, I can't give you four. I said, I think it'd be best if you just come, you know, I'll just come to you and you just come see the show. She was like, no, I'll do it. You can just give me one dress. Okay. So she does the show. And you know, it's funny, I gave her one of my school projects, which was like an evening gown that I made, right? Don't even start me on that dress. Okay. And it was made out of organza, silk organza. Okay. So anyway, she does the show. The show's amazing. You know, everybody pretty much shows up to do the show. The show's amazing. The show is called Legends, because all of the shows have a title, you know, all these shows have a title. And because of all the people that I had in the show, it was called Legends. That's not when we hooked up either, right? So fast forward, I see her, you know, I see her around town. You know, you're seeing her more, you know. One day I'm at Murphy's, because Murphy's was our hub, right? Funny, I ran across a documentary on the bars, like Jersey bars, and it talked about Murphy's, but it went back I want to say the 40s or something. It went back really far. It was always a gay bar, and it was always like that whole street, which is Edison Place downtown Newark.
Oh, Edison Place.
Yeah, had bars right there, right? So anyway, so I'm going to the bar one day, and Gigi, which is Tracy's sister, you know, Tracy has a sister, right? So Gigi sees me and Gigi's talking to me. I don't really know Tracy or Gigi like that, right? You know? So she says, oh, hey, you know, hey, you need to come and see Trace. You need to check Trace out. I was like, oh, okay. Because again, I don't really know her like that, right? You know? So she says, yeah, you should come see her. Come and see her. So she gives me the address, and you know, I call her probably like, you know, the next day or something, and I go visit her. So this, now at this point, this is like 86. So this is like 86. So I go visit her, and this is like the first time that we're really, you know, having any real connection other than me going pick up my dress back that time, you know. So we're really talking and laughing and, you know, just discovering each other, right? And she's fun, you know, all of that. And oh God. So basically, because Tracy will tell, I don't know if she'll even tell you this, but like at that time, Gigi and Tracy, they lived together. They had an apartment on Burnett, which is down off of James Street, right? Which is a very popular area. So they're like oil and water. They're like oil and water, even though they're family, right? So at that time, Tracy tried to run Gigi over with a car.
Oh
Okay.
my God.
So that's why Gigi was like, you should come and see her, like, you know, come come and whatever, because she stays to herself, right? She like, and I know her, so I know that at a point it's only at a point really it was just me and her, right? Like literally just me and her, nobody else in her world, right? And then I start, but I'm a social person, so I start, if you spoke with everybody that I know, I would be the connection to all of them. You know what I mean? I would be the link that linked everybody together, the
Yeah.
relationships, right? So, I started bringing her out more, like, first it just started me coming by every day. I would come by every day. I started working for Virgin Atlantic Airways. And so I work, and then I come from work and go to her house. She cooked dinner, we look at TV, we laugh, whatever. At this point I'm starting to do makeup. I'm testing makeup on her, taking pictures of her, because she's not even going out. She's a hermit at this point. She's not doing fashion. She's not, she's done, So, we're laughing, we're talking, we're doing all that stuff. Eventually I start getting her to do photo shoots. She comes out and she does photo shoots. We start going out to the club. We go to Midtown 43, which is when she first meets Octavia, which is a funny story. We go to Midtown 43, and we're standing there watching the show, because they got a show, because Wa Renee was the host of the show, but then show so was what's her name? What's her name? What's her name? Sorry, sorry, girl. I can't think of your name right now. So we're watching the show, and Octavia is standing like next to Tracy. Like, it's a person next to, it's Tracy, a person, then Octavia, right? And I look over, I see Octavia, and I said to Tracy, I whispered in her ear, I said, "She's beautiful." And Tracy said, "She's all right." And so a few minutes later, Tracy has to go to the bathroom. She goes to the bathroom. A few minutes later, Tracy, Octavia, and Danielle are down in the bathroom. And then, Tracy tells me, Tracy tells me this part of the story. She says, Tracy's in the mirror. Both, they're all in the mirror, right? And then Tracy says to, which one said to Tracy? Tracy says to Octavia, "You're lovely." And then Octavia says to Tracy, "You're beautiful, but if you tell anybody I said it, I'll deny So, and thus they meet, right? So, after that, that starts Tracy coming out more, people seeing Tracy. Plus, we're doing a lot of photos now. We're shooting with Preston Phillips. We're shooting with all these different photographers that, so even though the industry had kind of given up on her, or she gave up on it, I was bringing her back, and not even intentionally. I'm just like, I'm shooting. I'm shooting. I'm doing a lot of makeup at that point for different photographers. I'm shooting my clothes, and she's my muse. I don't even know what a muse is at that point. She's just my girl. She, that's it. When I do a show, she walks with me. When I do photos, she shoots for me, and so a lot of the history was documented in the 90s with me and Tracy.
Wow, that's amazing.
And also 86, so now I'm working at Virgin. So in 87, my sister Wendy has a baby. So she has a little girl, my niece Bianca. So Bianca becomes Tracy's godchild. So that just links us, like forever. So, and it's so funny, because Bianca, it's almost like Bianca picked who was going to be her godparents. She picked Tracy, she picked Dwayne. And they latched on. And so now Wendy has Bianca. She has to go back to work, at a point, and she's like, childcare. What about my baby? I'm like, well, Tracy, Tracy's home all day. Tracy could babysit her. So Tracy babysits her, and the bond is formed, and, yeah.
Wow. So the last couple questions that I wanted to run through are about some of the, if you could talk about some of the designers you've worked with. You've worked with, yeah, if you could just talk about some of the designers you've worked with over the years, Isaiah or any other designers you've worked with.
Well, again, it was Vera Couture, the first one that I told you about, and then there was Isaiah. So, funny thing, like, again, there was the insecurity issues that I had, right? So when I was secure enough, the first attempt that I had to go look for a job was for, because there used to be these posters post plastered around New York City. And the designer that I identified with at that time was, oh my God. I'm sorry, give me a second. I'm trying to think of his name. But anyway, he just died recently, like literally like a couple of months ago. So anyway, I saw his posters and I went to his place to try to get a job. I hadn't, and this, at this point, I hadn't even started. I don't think I started Trapagan yet. I hadn't started Trapagan, but I went to him to see if I can get a job. And but he said no. Not even looking at, qualifications or if I could do the job. It was just that he didn't have. He couldn't, like, he couldn't take on, and plus, I didn't know anything at that point. I got to tell you his name though. And then the second designer that I ever went to work for or wanted to work for was Isaiah. But it wasn't, I'm sorry, I'm gonna, I'm, I've got to tell you, John Haggins. John Haggins. And John Haggins also has a book. He has a book out. Yeah, so John Haggins. But then with Isaiah, so I'm in the 90s, this is the 90s, I'm finished school, all that stuff. And I go to Isaiah to see if I can get a job. At that point, Isaiah has died. He died from AIDS as well. So running his company at that point is designer Michael McCollum, who's amazing. I love Michael. I didn't know him. I know him now. I didn't know him then, right? So I go to him with my little portfolio and I try to get a job. And again, he can't hire me, blah, blah, blah. They don't have the whatever, whatever, right? So I didn't even realize at that point how I can't think of the word, but we would be in each other's life more after that, So yeah, this had to be maybe like 1990, whatever. But anyway, so yeah, like 1990. I remember he was having a sample sale, right? He was having a sample sale, and so I was telling Rosemary, I'm like, Rosemary, this designer Isaiah, they have like great clothes, very model clothes, cat suits and dresses, like short dresses, body conscious, blah blah blah. Everything was in lycra, cotton lycra. So I said, you should get, you should get a cat suit and you should get it da, da, da. So she was like, okay, I'm gonna give you the money and you go get me a cat suit. So she gives me the money, I go to the sample sale and I buy her a cat suit. And so when I get the cat suit, I rub the cat suit off, right? Rub it off so I can now make a cat suit from this. But I'm not really well versed in rubbing off, right? So it's still not, perfect, right? It just gives me the basics of a cat suit, anyway. So if you look at my stuff in 1990, like, because there are videos from all my fashion shows. At that time I did a show called Blush, right? Which had a lot of the top models in that show. Coco Mitchell, Adrian Washington, Pat Tracy, like all industry top models, right? So they were all a part of that show. And several designers who were, big at that time. But yeah, my stuff was kind of, it was a cross between Patrick Kelly meets Isaiah, my stuff, you know, because it was cotton lycra, but then I did these little baubles and stuff, sewn on stuff onto it, like Patrick, right? So, and I think for me, Patrick Kelly, Willie Smith, and Isaiah is like me. Like they make up pieces. And John Haggins at a point. John Haggins in the 80s, you know. I was John Haggins in the 80s, but yeah. Okay. So now I live in, I have my own apartment in 1990. I move in, I have a roommate. Her name is Martha. So she went to school with me. She went to Trapagan. She was a year ahead of me. So we're at Trapagan. So when I finally decide to get my own apartment, I'm thinking, who can I get as a roommate who will be responsible enough to pay their half of the rent? I think of Martha, but she had so many issues at home with her family. So I thought this would be perfect, right? And she thought it would be perfect. And, you know, she had a crush on me anyway, right? She missed all the signs. She missed all the signs of who I was, right? Go figure. But anyway, we move in. I think that she thought that, you know, it would be something else, or she could make it something else, or, you know, whatever. But none of that really worked. And I think after about a year, she got a little bitter and she decided to move out. She wasn't even telling me that she was moving out. She just silently kind of packed, because she was started to stay out, like, you know, stay over her mother's house over the weekend, you know, stuff like that. But stuff was slowly leaving the house. I didn't even recognize it because I was so caught up in my own little world. But one day I had an aha moment and I'm like, let me go in her room. And it was empty. So anyway, when she leaves out, because everything happens for a reason, and if one thing doesn't happen, then the next thing can't happen, right? So at that point, I realized, I'm going to try to stay here at this apartment by myself, but I'm not really ready to live by myself, right? I definitely wasn't ready to live by myself. One of my friends, John Kelman Greer, who's a makeup artist, an amazing talent, who used to give me bookings, right? So as a makeup, me doing makeup, John Kelman Greer, William Marshall, Quiet Fire, they would all give me the spillage of their work. Like if they had two bookings and they could only make one, they'd give the other one to me, right? So I was working as a makeup artist without ever having to have a book, right? So here I am. John calls me and he says, "What you doing?" And I'm telling him what happened. Martha moved out, da, 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 da. And he was like, "You should move, just move in with me. Just, you need to be in New York anyway. Come, you know, move in with me." And he had offered me that before, but this was the first time that I said yes. And I was like, okay. I don't even know why, what, when, where, but the stars aligned and all that stuff. And the next thing you know, I was moving out of my place, out of a two-bedroom apartment into a studio apartment in New York City on East 12th Street between 12th and Lex, between on 12th between 3rd and Lex. Look at this. So I ran across this the other day too. This, you see that? This is my telephone bill from then. From John's place. It's 1992, January 1992.
Wow.
John didn't have a phone. See, that's my address. East 12, you probably can't see
I
that.
see January 1992. Yeah, I see that.
And that's the right here is the our address, East 12th Street. So here's the history of that apartment. So Magic was a model who I actually shot last week. You probably saw the little cape stuff on Facebook.
Yes.
Yep. So that was Magic. So that was Magic's apartment and John took it over, right? So I moved in with John, and again, it was a studio apartment, but it was kind of big, right? As studios go in New York, right? But a lot of my stuff had to go in storage and I'm living with John. So I'm walking distance from work. You know, I'm still working at Virgin Atlantic, which was in a village off of Christopher Street. And directly next door to us, as I walk out the house, is the Parsons dormitory, right? So you have the Parsons dormitory next door, and there's a student there who's a big designer right now. His name is Aaron Potts. I don't know if you're familiar with Aaron Potts. So that's how I met Aaron. He lived right next door to me. So I'm in this apartment, and that apartment has so much history because downstairs from us was Isaiah and his wife, right? Don't ask, I don't know, but yeah, he was married. Okay. So by this point, Isaiah's dead, but she's running the business. And they had three stores. They had one in Soho, one on 7th Avenue across the street from Barney's, when Barney's was right there on 7th Avenue. And they had one on 38th Street. The main hub was the 38th Street. That's where they made everything. It was like more like the factory or whatever. So one day she comes upstairs, or she knocks on the door. John opens the door, and she comes in, and my stuff is on the dress form. And she says, "Oh, what's this? Whose stuff is this?" And John says, "Oh, this is Douglas. You don't know Douglas? So this is Douglas says, blah 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 blah, right?" So she was like, "Oh, I love your stuff." She says, "I'm looking for a designer to work with me at my store." She said, "I have somebody who's working there, but it's not working out. He doesn't have my aesthetics." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, I work, I'm off on Thursdays and Fridays. I can come on Thursdays and Fridays and work, but I have a regular job." So she says, "Okay, that's fine." So I start working there on Thursdays and Fridays. I go there. And by that point, everybody has left, like her whole staff. Like, she used to have, pattern makers and sewers and all that. So all of that's gone. It's only her there. The store is basically bare. There's nothing really on the racks because there's nobody there to make it. Because the guy that they had, he wasn't doing, her aesthetics. So she directs me to the workroom and just says, "I need 12 of these, 10 of these, 20 of these, da, da, da," and no directions. Like, she's not telling me how they, how they do what they do. I gotta just figure it out, right? So they have all the slopers. You know what slopers are, right?
No. I mean, I thought it was like a dress form.
So slopers are patterns. Let me show you real quick. Because right here, that's a dress. Don't pay that no mind. That's just a dress. But okay, this is the big one too. So this, so these are my slopers, right?
Oh, okay. I've seen that before, but I didn't know that's what it was called. Yes.
So those are slopers. I have like tons of them, right? So anyway, so all my patterns are on that. Whatever I do is taken from that. That's the master. Those are the masters, and then I can make anything from that, right? So basically, she has those, right? And she tells me, do this, do that, da, da, da. And she leaves because everything is the workroom is in the basement, and then on the main floor is the selling floor. So I'm down there and I'm cutting skirts and sewing skirts. I'm really probably taking off too much seam allowance because she didn't tell me how much seam allowance is in the skirt, all this stuff, but I'm trying to figure it out. So basically, if it's a medium, I just made it into a small because I'm cutting. Because when you use the machine cuts as well, right? So anyway, I do all these orders, and I take them up, put them on the rack, and then I come up and I look, and I'm just like, at that point, I realize that, wow, you did this. This is all you. You just filled those racks. You filled these orders. If you could do this for them, you could do it for yourself, And then when you look at the markup, how much she marked those skirts up, or she marked those, I'm like, wow, they're paying that much for this, So that's giving me confidence that I can do it too, for myself. So that went on for a couple of weeks, me doing that. And I had to really be talked into doing this job because when, even though she offered it to me, I tried to give it to Bob Henry. but it wasn't really like an industry job that he would do. He was higher echelon. He wouldn't, do that. But he said, no, this would be good for you. You do this, right? So I took on the job. So she one day she came in, she had taken on a video project, right? For Allison Williams. Allison Williams, a singer, right? And she had a big song out and she was doing a video. She's a big girl, she's a plus girl. And at that point I wasn't doing plus, but okay. So I said to her, she wanted she they pulled stuff from the store, from Macy's or Barney's or whoever, right? They pulled, and then of all things, they pulled Montana, Club Montana, Terry Mugler. They pulled things like that, and they wanted things made in her size, like that, right? I was like, oh, I can't do that. But I can get somebody who can, right? So I enlisted my friend Michael Taylor. And so they spoke and agreed on the price, and he came in, and we had to do this in like a night or two, right? So I did the jump, so I rubbed the jumpsuit off, and then he did all the rest of the stuff, and boom, that the video happened. And then after that, it went on for a couple of weeks, and then one day she says to me, there was an accident at the store. Somebody had broken in the window, right? Like took a trash can and threw it through the window. Just clean window with Isaiah written across it, right? She's like, so we're gonna have to pay for that. And so she's not able to pay me. Okay. So you want me to work, but you're not able to pay me. We're gonna take that money. Oh no. I'm done then. I'm done. If you can't pay me, I'm done. And I went home and I told John, what had happened. And John was like, no. And he called her. He was like, if you can't pay him, he's not coming. Because John was like my big brother and all of that. So, yeah, but that was pretty much the end of that. But I left with an understanding of, the silhouette, the clothes, what I needed to be doing. And, I never skipped a beat. I kept producing for myself. I got better and better, and that's when I walked into so now this is like 90, 92, 93, and that's so like October of 92 I moved here where I am now. So I've been in this apartment for 30 years, 30 something years, right? But when I moved here, this is when I did the whole cat suit. Right over there in my kitchen, because my machines were set up in my kitchen at the time. So most of the things that are iconic, or became iconic, that Danielle Revlon wore, or Octavia or Tracy, most of those things were done right here in this apartment, like 92, 93, 94. Yeah.
Wow. I have like two questions left, but one of them is in addition to designing, I know you said you also mentor designers and and models in your, I'm thinking about CMS Studios, I think is what it was called. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about CMS Studios and what inspired you to open it and your mentoring models and
Okay. CMS Studios, and also you want to mention makeup, right?
yes. Well,
So
yeah, makeup, CMS
really, really
Studios.
quickly, I'll tell you about the makeup, okay? Makeup, I worked for Iman Cosmetics and Black Opal Cosmetics. So one day I got a phone call. I wasn't even here. So my machine picked up the message, which I still have the message, right? I can play it for you. But one day I come back in, I listen to my machine, and the message says, Douglas, it's Iman. Please call me. And I almost fell out because I love Iman. Iman is like the epitome of models, right? So I call Iman, and then she offers me a job. So she her makeup line had just came out, and she wanted to book me to do a 15-city tour, where I had to go around to all of the J.C. Penney's and teach the store workers, sellers, about the product, how to apply it, skincare and foundation. Byron Barnes, who is a makeup artist, a major makeup artist, he facilitated her her line. He did her line. He also did Naomi Sims' line, right? So anyway, he was supposed to go on tour, but he couldn't be bothered to go on tour. And I was elected to go on tour and do that. So that was monumental. And then Black Opal came up after that. And I did, I worked with Black Opal. I have worked, I did Celia Cruz's last video. I did her makeup for her last video. There's actually a behind the scenes video if you Google Celia Cruz, and you'll see me like painting her, right? I did Suzanne DePass. Do you know who Suzanne DePass is?
No.
Anybody? No? Okay. You ever see the Michael Jackson story? Like, you know, the Jackson 5 story when they were like,
Oh, yeah.
and you know Vanessa Williams was in it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So Vanessa Williams was actually playing Suzanne DePass,
Okay.
right? Which was their manager, the handler, you know. But I did the actual Suzanne DePass. I did her makeup. I did Jennifer Holliday. I did Najee and Freddie Jackson. They did a song together. I did the video for that. I did Houdini. I did Jason Weaver. I did 2 Chainz.
Two chains.
Yep. And a host of other stuff. You know. I did magazine covers. I did CD covers. Yeah. I did a lot of makeup. It at a you know, if I wasn't so young, if I was more focused, I probably would have been a makeup artist, you know. But I was always changing, you know. I'm a Pisces. We swim all over the place, right? So, you know, I left one, I left makeup to dance, I left dancing to model, I left modeling to just, but always design was always first and foremost. So I always came back to design, you know. At a point, when I started working for Virgin Atlantic, I went to London. I was able to always wanted to go to Paris. So once I working with Virgin and I got the opportunity to go to London, first thing I wanted to do was model. So I got, you know, I got my friend who went with me, and we lucked out. We got an agency, and I worked in London and I worked in Japan. So, you know, I was able to live out my dream, but I always came back to design because after going on go-see after go-see after go-see in London, I'm like, this, I don't really want to do this. This is like job hunting. I don't want to job hunt every day, you know? So I'm still at Virgin though, you know, I'm still at Virgin Atlantic. So, but I went back to designer, just stayed in design. So then CMS Studio. So CMS Studio happens in 97. So mind you, I left Virgin Atlantic in 95, right? So they left New York. They moved to Connecticut. I had the option of going with them, but I didn't want to do that. At that point, I just wanted to design. In my as I sat there, because I worked at reservations, excuse me. So as I sit there and take call after call after call after call, I'm just sketching. The whole time I'm just sitting there sketching, you know, and I just want to be a designer now. Okay. So when they left, I said, this is the perfect time. Let me buy the machines I need. Let me just do whatever. Let me get my 401k plan. Let me just, okay, boom. So now I'm set up. I'm home. I got my machines. I'm working. And, you know, I'm not even scared, like, you know, trying to figure out how, why, what, whatever, right? I'm just walking on faith. And then one day I get a phone call from Rosemary. Rosemary, always the catalyst who leads me into these places, right? So she says, and you think I talk like fast and excited, like she's even more, right? So she's like, you know, she's like, oh, wait, because she talks like that, sure, real fast, right? So she says, well, listen, me and Karen, who Karen is another friend of ours, she's like, me and Karen, we found this space. We found this space downtown Newark, and it's like really big. And you know, we want you to come into the space because I've always been that person who I was just telling Rosemary yesterday. I was talking to her on the phone, and I was telling her, I said, you know, I said it's my time now. I'm all my energy is being devoted into me and my legacy and trying to build my legacy. I've worked. I've done everything for you. I've done everything with Tracy. I've done everything for Roslyn. You know, all those people, you know, I'm the first person they call when they need whatever, right? So I was telling her, I said, oh, CMS. So she's telling me about, okay, we have this space. Karen is a photographer. Rosemary is a model trainer, right? She's a model, but she, wanted to train models, right? So I said, okay. She said, we want you to come into the space because they want to bring me into the space because they know that I'll take over. Like, but happily so, because they don't really want to do the work, So I'll have ideas and all that kind of stuff. So they's like, well, at least come and see it. Just come and see it. Because I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm home. I'm, set up. My machines are there, There's like, come and see it. Come and see it. I was like, okay. Although I'm home, I've started to rent. I've rented out the space downtown Newark, across the street from City Hall, on Broad Street from my friend Curtis. Right? He has a space that he's not using. I rent his space to do my museum. So I do extensions to museum. The first exhibit I have is a designer's exhibit. I showcase all the local designers. And then the second exhibit is Karen's photography, which she had never had an exhibit before. So that's the first time that she had an exhibit. So I have that space, but I'm sewing from home. And then I turn that space into like a store, right? My Soho kind of store. But it's on the second floor. Nobody, even though it's a window there, the buses go by, but you don't really, you're not paying any attention to it. So I'm sitting in there all day long and nobody's coming. I'm just sitting in there, right? So when she does give me this opportunity, she says, just come and see the space. Just come and see it. It's big. You could do whatever you want there. You could even have shows there. It's big enough, blah, 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 right? Because it's a loft.
Okay.
I go and I see the space and my mind just starts clicking. I'm like, oh, look at that. I could do this. I could do that. Okay. So I agree. I agree to come into the space. So I take everything out of the other space and I move everything into there and I move everything from home and I move everything there. And now I'm downtown Newark in this big loft space, right? So the idea is that she'll be teaching models. Karen will be doing photo shoots and then I'm basically the caretaker of the place. I'm there while they're both in New York working because Rosemary is a showroom model at this time. Karen is a receptionist at a design firm, and the place is just sitting there empty. So I come in, and we got to paint, we got to do all this stuff. So once we get the place up and running, and we do an opening event, it's amazing. Of course, we're doing a fashion show. Everybody comes out, even Lauryn Hill. You know Lauryn Hill, right? Lauryn is Karen's cousin. So Lauryn comes because Karen invites her, right? So everybody's there. We do this thing. And it looks like it's really like gonna be awesome. The mayor does a the mayor comes, he gives us some kind of proclamation or something. Channel, whatever channel it is that Newark has, they cover it. The Star Ledger covers it. We get a full page in the Star Ledger. And this is 97, right? So nothing else is happening downtown. Halsey Street is not existing right now, like it is now, it's not even existing. But this is like, but what we are experiencing at the time is what James Taliaferro and Bobby Roberts did with the showcase with FTD. It's kind of like the same thing because I'm pulling from that too. So I'm like, okay, well, now we have these meetings. We have to have these meetings, how we're going to bring in people and how we're going to bring in money. So I set up a calendar of events, and I do the newsletter, which I already had a newsletter before that, which was called Legends, and then I start a new newsletter, which is CMS Studios, right? So, which is, goes out to everybody letting what we're doing. So we do, we have jazz artists as we bring in, we have R&B artists as we bring in, we have poetry readings. We do all these events so that we can make money, to do whatever. Yeah, so that's how CMS Studios started.
And where was the loft? You said downtown. Was it on
Downtown on Washington Street between
Washington Street? Yeah, I know.
What market, West
Yeah,
Market,
yeah.
right? You know where Bamberger's is, right?
Well, yeah, yes.
Yeah, Well, Bambergers, yeah, Bambergers, yeah. So yes, right across the street from
Okay, yes.
Bambergers.
I grew up hearing stories about hamburgers.
Bambergers was the first, like one of the first visuals that I had of fashion, because the windows used to be really excited. Curtis Anderson, thank you. Curtis
Yeah.
Anderson was a designer, and he used to work at Bambergers, and he used to do the windows. So
Wow.
that's when, like, that's before they broke up the store.
Yeah.
It was amazing. He used to turn it out, and he was one of the first designers that I really came in contact with, as a young boy. Like, when I just as I started high school, so in the 9th grade, my first fashion show that I went to was at Vailsburg High, and then the next one was at Westside High, and he was the featured designer at both of those schools. And so that was like I said, the circle was so small. So at his show, he had Yvette Carr, Dawn Toler, all of those girls who came from FTD. They were the models in his cabine, so yeah, so he was like the first designer that I saw.
Wow. So my next question is, which you kind of touched on at the top, is I know that you've built an extensive archive and you've mentioned how you keep everything, not only about your career, but the contributions of other fashion designers, even with your exhibit extensions
And models too,
and
mainly
oh,
models.
okay, and models.
It started with models, really. I just
So the
always,
question is, oh,
I'm sorry, no, go
I
ahead.
just wanted to ask you, so why has this documentation been so important to you? Like, why has it been so important to keep all of this material?
Because I think it's our responsibility to tell our own stories. Nobody else is going to see the value in what we've contributed. So there actually needs to be a brick and mortar space where we can donate, like designers or clients can donate their goods when they're finished with them or whatever, because storage is always a problem, storage space. Designers like Ronald Petty and Bob Henry, they died. What happened to their stuff? Did their family throw it out? Because 9 times out of 10, we are the oddballs in the family, the designer. You know what I mean? Because we're not regular in the sense that we're not getting a 9 to 5. We don't think like everybody else do. We're special. We're talented. We're special. And while we're here, people, they feed off of you, but once we're gone, you're just kind of forgotten. So I think that, while we're here, especially today, and when we have these formats like, Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and things of that nature, we can tell pieces of our stories. We can start to document our own history and legacy and put it out there so that it is forever out there. So even when I'm gone, just like John Haggins, he just passed recently. He has a book out. He was very busy on social media. He had a traveling channel, so you can Google him and find him, but you can't Google Scott Barry and find anything. And Scott Barry was an amazing designer, the guy who I went to school with, Rafi Thomas, Darren Thomas, he worked with him in Milan. When he died, he was in Milan, but you can't find those things, and our history needs to be told. And each of us contribute to the industry and the pot of design, so that the whole story is full, that's why it's important to me that each one teach one, each one bring one, we tell our history.
Absolutely. And the final question is, what are your dreams for the impact or legacy of Douglas Says? I mean, I know a part of it is documenting these stories, but what else? What are your visions for the legacy of Douglas Says?
Well, I think now what it used to be, it's changed. It's still about gathering all of the information and just having it readily available. all of me, I haven't gotten the full script yet. The spirit hasn't advised me. So all I can say right now is I'm working on documenting and a documentary. What I realized that, like, recently I went to I try to be supportive of other designers, especially if I see you. And what I mean, what I mean by if I see you, if I like your work or I appreciate you, I see, I'm not gonna waste my time and sit front row at a show that but so I went to Epperson. I don't know if you're familiar with Epperson. He's amazing. He's one of my favorite designers. He's out of Brooklyn, but he just opened a store in the East, like East 55th Street, 57th Street, something like that. So I went to the opening, and then I ran into a young lady who's a model, and we wind up hanging out that day, did Central Park, and she gave me a ride home. So she's talking to me, and she's telling me. I'm laughing, right? Okay. She's telling me, oh, you should be doing this and you should be doing. If I had a dollar for all the shouldas that people give me, they're free on shouldas, but nobody's really helping you. They're just giving you advice. But I think if you're gonna give advice, you have to realize who a person is, what their aesthetics is, and what they want to be, what they want to do. You can't assume that this is the formula right here for every designer. This is the formula right here for every artist. You fit. No, we all don't fit that, So you got to figure out before you can dish out, the shouldas, right? So yeah, but I realized for myself. And I have to talk to myself sometimes. I have to talk myself down when I'm looking, like during Fashion Week, I feel a certain kind of way because, but I'm not a part of Fashion Week. I don't want to be a part of that, like the system, the way the system is set up. I don't want to be a part of that. That's not the road I'm traveling on, I see myself as kind of like a baby Andy Warhol, right? And in that, when I say the spirit speaks to me or directs me and tells me to do this or do that, collect my answer machine messages, do all these things that I have no idea why I do it. I'm just being obedient.
Feel called to do it.
Exactly. But eventually it'll show itself. Eventually I will have everything that I'm supposed to have because I've been obedient, So I've collected this, I've held on to this, I've done this, and eventually it'll show itself and I'll have a clear aha, so that's basically, where I'm at. And I have to say to myself when I see, like, when I'm doing Fashion Week, Fashion Week just happened and it's happening in Europe right now. I kind of am not on social media as much at that time because it's you're inundated with this stuff, and I'm just like, oh, sorry, just not another, no. Yeah. But for me, my direction is different from, the other designers. Sidebar. Okay, so remember when I reached out to you and I asked you about I wanted to show at the museum, and you gave me the contacts, right? So I hit them up, right? And somebody hit me back and they said, okay, yes, that date is available. Let me check this. And then, I never heard from him again. I hit him up again, never heard from him again. I hit him up like three times, never heard from them anymore, right? But I've given up on that because what to me, what is happening is it's not supposed to happen yet. It's supposed to, or maybe it's supposed to happen someplace else. To me, that's the spirit intervening. And even, because I had the same issue with the library, the person that I was in contact with before, they gave me a ridiculous fee for the library, something that I've been doing shows at for the last 10 years. You go from $150 to book the space to $5,000. That makes no sense. But I figure when it's right, it'll present itself, the place, the time, the everything. So, it's okay. Plus, I'm a part of this wonderful exhibit in February.
I know it's gonna be okay. I'm about to say formally say thank you so much, and I'm about to stop recording, so we could just like chat.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.